my pretty little pet. I love you. So I stroke it, and I pet it, and I massage it. Yeah, I love it. I love my little naughty pet. You're naughty. And then I take my naughty pet, and I go... Oh, I killed it! I killed my sail!
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Mayor Rick Kreisman, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, young Metro, don't trust you, I'm gonna shoot.
Beautiful morning, yeah, the summer morning, babe. Nothing on the water. Beautiful morning, yeah, the summer morning, babe. Nothing on the water.
It is the Homemade Broadcast. Heard right here every Sunday, 6:15, Radio St. Pete. Replays Monday, 10:15. Tuesdays, 4:15 a.m. And as always, on podcast at hmbradio.com. We load those on Tuesdays. Sometimes we have some HMB sides, which are web-exclusive content available only on podcast. We can curse there, although nobody really does, which is surprising to me. But no, we're all good. Good folk, good kids, and we don't curse that often. But yeah, we got other shows on HMB Radio, including James Bailey's My Mom's Favorite Podcast. We have the City Hall Podcast that we upload that's heard here on Radio St. Pete, and you can also get it on HMB Radio. More shows to come, I'm sure. People keep telling me they're going to do stuff, and whether they do it or not is their business, but they say they will, so I'm sure we're always going to be adding new stuff. So make sure you subscribe to the iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you're getting your podcasts from. They're available on YouTube. I mean, there's so many different ways to listen. There's no excuse. So thank you to those who did vote in the Best of the Bay. I know they wrapped up their voting. I don't expect to take that home, but it would be cool if I did. You know, there's a lot of steep competition. There's a lot of good podcasts listed. So we'll see. I don't know. It was an honor to be nominated again this year. That's all I can say. Thanks, Mom, for nominating me. I think it only takes one, so I appreciate it if that's who it was. That was pretty neat. So what else? The Olympics were going on. I think they're probably wrapping up by the time this airs. But what's your favorite thing about the Olympics? I made a joke on Facebook about how I would rather watch preseason football than watch the Olympics. And I don't watch preseason football. And people got mad at me about it, which was kind of wild. Didn't really expect that. Just a joke, guys. But actually, at the open mic at Yard of Vale on Thursday, they don't turn off the TVs there. So I ended up having to watch some of the Olympics. And it was pretty captivating. I watched Michael Phelps win a couple gold medals. Then on Sunday, I went over to a friend's house and watched some gymnastics, which was very impressive. Women's gymnastics is probably my favorite Olympic sport, but it is still nothing compared to watching black dudes flip over cars on World Star Hip Hop. I feel like that could make the Olympics even better, is if during the floor exercises they get some car company to sponsor the event, then you put a car in the middle of the floor and watch these girls flip over them, and whoever wins the gold medal wins the car. Right? That's brilliant. Marketing genius, if you ask me. It's an unclaimed opportunity for the Olympic Committee. So get on it, guys. It'd be pretty neat to watch. But no, there was cool stuff in the Olympics, I guess. I watched Usain Bolt, too. That was impressive. They had Trayvon Bowden, is his name? Bolin? He's from right here in St. Pete. He runs for Baylor. I tried to reach out to him because he's from St. Pete and was in the finals of that 100 meters. Came in last, but still, that's pretty awesome. He's from the area. I tried to reach out to him on Twitter, but no response yet. I'd love to have him on the show, talk about his experiences at the Olympics and if he has Zika virus now. It seems that things went off kind of without a hitch there. I mean, there was a few hiccups along the way. I saw some videos of robbers waiting, just robbing tourists, but not as many as you would think. I know I saw something before the game started that a doctor said, do not stick your head under the water if you have to compete in the Olympic Games outside, because Rio is just a hellhole. They really got in deep with the Olympic Committee and made a bunch of promises to them that they had to keep. So that meant that they could not take care of their people, basically. They spent all this money just trying to get ready for these games. And I saw actually this HBO Real Sports thing, and they were talking about it's a hellhole. There's ghettos all over the place. There's sewage just pumping into the streets. And then in turn it goes into the ocean and the bays and the lagoons and all the stuff where these people, the sailors and all this stuff, they have to deal with this crap. Zika virus is bad down there. It's already in Florida. So I guess time is going to tell to see the real impact of these athletes that had to be down there, these poor people that live down there. I feel for them, man, because what a hellhole. I'm so glad. I know I won the lottery, and it doesn't matter where you're from, really, it doesn't, but I am super stoked that I was born in America and an American citizen. Just seeing what's going on in the rest of the world, holy moly, you should consider yourself lucky if you're here, because it is just a mess pretty much everywhere else. It seems like, anyways. I know there's great places in the world, but Europe maybe is okay. Everywhere else just seems awful, awful. So you already won the lottery if you're here in the United States of America, Canada. So we should really count our blessings and consider ourselves lucky. I know that, what's his name? Well, not Michael Phelps, the other guy that's a pretty good swimmer, Ryan Lochte. He got robbed at gunpoint. And I've always heard that he's a complete moron. And I guess some people identifying as police officers pulled over their vehicle, got him out of the car, pulled out their guns, said, get on the ground. And then this Ryan dude said, I didn't do anything, so I'm not getting on the ground. And then some guy pulled out his pistol, cocked it, put it up next to his head, said, get down on the ground. And then the guy said, Ryan said, whatever, and got down on the ground. It was pretty crazy. I don't know. I don't think that guy understands just how close he came to dying over. I don't know if he's brave or dumb or maybe a little bit of combo there. And maybe he's a little bit of both. And he actually has to stay in Rio now until they, I don't know if they caught the people that did it or something. They have to do the trial or what. But, man, that sucks. I would be aching to get out of there as soon as possible. But it seems like it went down pretty much. I almost feel like that the Olympics started talking, like it was like a propaganda machine against the Olympics, right? Like saying how terrible things were going to be. Because when it wasn't as bad as what was alleged to be reported, people would be like, oh, it's actually pretty good. I mean, you can't complain. Only one, a couple guys got robbed at gunpoint, one famous guy, big deal, you know? So it could be, I don't know. I don't put anything across anybody anymore. Who knows? So Olympics are over. We've got two more years before the winter ones. I know everybody's excited. But yeah, whatever. So this show is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, right here in St. Pete, and Slybar.com is their website address, and then Truvy Salon and Spa, that is located at 8908 4th Street North here in St. Pete. Christy Parker down there does a great job. Another Best of the Bay nominee. What's her phone number? My internet is really lagging. This is not my fault because it shouldn't be going this slow. I'm only taking 10% responsibility. Jewelry Salon and Spa's phone number is 727-329-9751. Go to TruvySalonAndSpa.com. Make an appointment. Go see her. Hopefully she'll win an award. I know a lot of people love her and the work that she does, so make sure you go and support her. If you want to leave a message for this show, you can leave a voicemail or you can leave a text message, even if you want to. 813-693-2124, if you feel so obliged. Text or calls. If your message is funny and doesn't curse in it, I will play it. So get cracking. Give me a call. Let's do some chatting here. I'd like to find a way to take calls. I think I could do it now but I don't do a show live, so it'd be really hard to do that. And so I guess I can't really do that. But, you know, maybe in the future that will be an option. And so today the guest is, I met this guy at Cage Brewing. He's a friend of John Berg's who runs the Wove Print Company. Thaddeus Cesari, I think that's how you say his last name. Talked to him very briefly, and I just kind of, Red Feather was playing, and it was really loud, and then he said something about he makes videos for NASA, and I was like, what? That's awesome. I think I had my NASA t-shirt on, and that's how we started talking about it. So I just thought he'd be kind of an interesting guy to talk to. I think he does some writing, too. I mean, I've talked to him 5 minutes, so I don't really know this fella at all, but I think he's going to have some really cool stories about NASA and what the future of the program's going to be. Maybe he's got some inside information on that. I know he's not an engineer or anything, but I'm sure he knows the ins and outs, what's happening over there at Cape Canaveral and Houston and all that. So Thaddeus will be joining us momentarily through the magic of radio. You will not even know that there's going to be a pause here. You might just feel it a little bit, but you won't know. Thaddeus Cesari. All right, welcome, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Sounded okay? Good. You got to pull that thing up. You can kind of move this at your discretion, too.
All right, cool.
So you were just telling me, but tell me again your role with NASA.
All right. So the title would be NASA Chronicler. NASA brings me in to chronicle events. I've just shifted over to video documentaries, docu-shorts, really. I started as a photojournalist and have since merged over to video journalism and specifically documentation type things.
So are you kind of like an independent contractor? Or?
Yeah, that's how NASA works with a lot of what they do. They bring in independent outside contractors and have people that are good in specific skill sets perform specific tasks.
So you're mostly dealing with a publication,
mm-hmm.
and then the publication kind of sends you down there, and then they kind of purchase, if they like the material, they kind of just buy it off the publication?
That is correct. The publication, I've got to deal with them to continually buy my material since it's pretty cutting edge, not a lot of people. Usually there's not even 50 people of the international media at these events for launches that they allow in, so it's pretty restricted access and material.
If NASA is, not that it's dying or anything, but there's kind of been this scaling back mm-hmm. within the last decade or so, it would seem like they would be welcoming any sort of media they could get to come in there.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they so picky, only allowing a certain amount of people to come in?
Well, it's that's something that I've been actively trying to, that initial statement that NASA's been scaling back. That in ways is true, but in other ways is very incorrect. There's been a lot of federal funding and also private sector funding that have come into the NASA realm. And there's just been a refocus. And I think the issue came from the end of the shuttle era, you know, about 5 years ago. And that was an iconic thing. You know, the shuttle itself was, that was representative of NASA. That was, you know, I mean, when you saw the shuttle, you thought of space and NASA itself. But the end of the shuttle era was, it wasn't the end of NASA. It was actually, when I got down to studying it and researching it, it was more an efficiency upgrade. They no longer needed what the shuttle provided. So they switched around formulas and they switched around funding and really started to focus on different areas of development. So even though the shuttle program ended, federal funding remained. I mean, it's been in decline. This year we got a little bit more money, but it's still, I mean, $18 billion? I mean, that's a good amount of money.
Yeah, but don't these missions, I mean, some of these things cost $6 billion bucks?
Some of them do. Some, yeah. But this is that's an annual budget. And for a rocket, it takes, gosh, just years of research and development, and then years more of construction, and then years more of testing. So you have a continuous flow of annual federal budgeting that comes in.
I know they were doing, after they retired the space shuttle, they were talking about working on this new spacecraft to get us back into space.
Mm-hmm.
Has that kind of been put on the back burner due to SpaceX and some of these other independent companies getting in the game?
Not quite. It's just initially it started as the Constellation program, and that got the kibosh, and its resurface is what's called the Orion. And that's the next generation of deep space exploration capsules. So that's still very much in effect. I've gone and talked to the lead researchers and the lead program managers for the Orion, and I've actually seen it itself. It's actually gone to space once, made a few laps around Earth, came back, landed. And I think in the next year or two, they're going to be sending it back up again. So that one is just about close to being ready.
So is SpaceX then with their Dragon program, is that more of just a transport system up to the space station, or do they see themselves getting into more of long-range travel?
Well, it's both. It's designed initially as it's a very intelligent plan, as initially a cargo capsule. But the actual design itself is meant to support eventually crew. So SpaceX has been sending up a lot of cargo to the International Space Station, but the modifications to make the Dragon capsule turn over to the Dragon crew capsule is not too difficult, and we should see it in a year or two for that as well. And that's under the guise of the NASA Commercial Crew Program, which is actually very exciting. I made a video on it, and it's published on my YouTube. It's an interesting program.
I know they were using Russia for a while. Mm-hmm. Have they kind of stopped using them and just went primarily to SpaceX?
Well, that's exactly what the Commercial Crew Program is. Russia has been a very reliable source of transport to space. And if you want to look at it one way, it's monopoly. There's only one way to send astronauts right now to space, and that's through Kazakhstan, through their Roscosmos Russian space program, Proton rocket. And the Soyuz capsule, that's been running for, gosh, over 50 years. But in 2018, we will see the Commercial Crew Program come online, and the United States has already signed contracts with JAXA, Japanese Space, ESA, the European, Canadian Space Agency, and the United States. So in the next few years, we're going to be sending our own astronauts on our own rockets inside of our own capsules from the United States. So, yes, we've been relying on the Russians, and they've been price gouging the heck out of us. I mean, just if you look at the numbers, it's almost not even fair, but that's what happens when you have a monopoly over such a market.
Yeah, you pay what the market will pay you.
Mm-hmm.
So with these new technologies that are coming about, where do you see – what's like the biggest advance that you're seeing come up the quickest?
Well, that one definitely goes to Elon Musk. He's he's quite a pioneer. We've seen him do things in different industries. You know, Tesla's taking off. It's doing fantastic. And he's applied a similar model to SpaceX, just high performance, cheap, cutting edge, and highly technologically advanced things. So specifically, something that's never been done before is taking a rocket, delivering a payload to orbit, and then returning that actual rocket to Earth. And that's what Elon has done. He's with his Falcon 9 rocket, he's sent some payloads multiple times. He's actually done it six times successfully so far. So send a payload up, turn the rocket around, and just slowly, gently land it back on Earth. And that's never been done before, but now it's done six times.
Yeah, it wasn't even on Earth. It was like on a platform in the ocean, right, which is even crazier.
Yeah, there's been a couple on Earth and a couple on there's two Earth for mobile drone ships. They're called ASDS, Autonomous Spaceport Drone Ships. And the one specifically that they use is actually called Of Course I Still Love You. pretty interesting nomenclature.
I like that. So they're using, NASA's still going to build their own ships. But you're going to have these private companies in the mix too.
Yep.
Are they kind of doing that? Is NASA having something that they can bounce off of and compete against? Or is it just more minds in the basket? Because it seems like, I guess, if you have companies to compete against, innovation might kind of go faster. Yeah. Is that the idea?
Yeah, you would. That's one of the benefits. But also what it does is it insulates NASA from failure. So originally NASA was this wide-arching, I guess, entity. Everything space went through NASA. And if there was a failure, it was viewed as NASA failing. And what has been done is NASA's brought in individual private contractors to do very specific tasks. So say, for example, if a private contractor that builds the rocket and that rocket goes on to fail, it's not NASA's fault. It's the private contractor's fault for failing. And also, like you said, you bring in, multi-billion dollar industries and you make them compete against each other. And the technological advancement there is just profound. I mean, you've got SpaceX, Elon Musk landing rockets now, and his main competitor, which is a conglomerate of Lockheed Martin and Boeing, they're scrambling now. I mean, they're just like, we need a reusable rocket. And they've got one in the line, but it's not ready. But it's urging that need to have reusability. Otherwise, they would have just kept using what they're using, a very expensive rocket, and just kept gouging the government for hundreds of millions of dollars. But Elon's come in, introduced a very cheap model, a reusable model, and now that old guard of Lockheed Martin and Boeing, they're just like, wow, we got to catch up.
Is there any plans for these private companies to take care of deep space projects, sending drones and rovers and stuff like that to other places in the solar system, maybe even beyond? Is there any plans for that?
Sure. The private industry via that conglomerate, Lockheed Martin and Boeing, that I was just speaking about, it's called United Launch Alliance, ULA. And say, for example, the New Horizons mission to Pluto that everyone got pretty excited about, launched about nine years ago, that was launched on a private sector rocket via the ULA. They've got their hand in the basket. But what's happening right now is NASA's urging private sector to pretty much take over low Earth orbit. And low Earth orbit is just things that are close to the Earth. And if you can have a lot of private sector companies, contractors, whatever, conglomerates, competing in this low Earth market, you can take the NASA federal budget and then refocus that on deep space exploration, which is particularly exactly what's happening right now. But private contractors such as SpaceX, Elon, he has designs in the work to push that schedule and actually join deep space exploration. He actually plans to send payload to Mars in 2018.
Is that for the incoming manned mission?
Well, it's a very long plan, but yeah, this is one of the preceding steps. So it's called the Red Dragon, and he wants to, in the years prior to humans setting foot on the Red Planet, which is something that will happen very soon, he wants to send a lot of cargo there. And if you send a lot of cargo there and you send a lot of new technology that can robotically function prior to humans arriving, you can get a lot of the things that humans would need prepared prior to them being there. Case in point, I actually interviewed the company Made in Space. They're a 3D printing company. And one of his goals was actually to send 3D printing machines to Mars. And not only that, but 3D aggregate makers. So aggregate is like the ink that goes into a 3D printer. So if you can send these aggregate makers, they crush up the rock, and they break it down into that 3D printing ink, you feed it into the 3D printer, and you have that going for years prior to humans being there. And then when they get there, they'll have habitat modules set up. They'll have all sorts of things set up, so they don't have to get, to Mars and then, start breaking a sweat building a home. It'll be there ready for them prior to them getting there.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
What's the time on that before that's ready to go?
That, the Made in Space, the 3D printing, that is, I'm not exactly certain on that, but the journey to Mars, the Red Dragon missions that Elon will be sending, that's 2018.
No, it's 2 years away, not even.
Yeah,
less. Gosh, this year's almost over already. That's crazy.
Yeah, so we've got rovers. There's things orbiting around Mars, but the private sector, Elon himself, is going to be sending payloads to Mars real soon.
There was a gap you mentioned earlier where we were kind of talking about it, where Russia was kind of taking us to space.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? Why did the U.S. drop the ball of having no other resources to get to space? And why did we have to use Russia?
That's a good question. So the shuttle program ended in 2011, like we talked about earlier. That was our transport. That's how we got guys up to the International Space Station. That's actually how we built the International Space Station. We'd put all those little modules that we'd eventually connect up in space inside the shuttle, send it up with some guys, they'd assemble it, and eventually we'd transport them up there via the shuttle to live in it. So at the end of the shuttle program, there was this investment in the infrastructure of being able to retake this market from Russia. And, you know, for things of such high technology and hundreds of billions of dollars, it just simply doesn't happen quick. So in 2011, we knew that we were going to have to rely on the Russians, and we knew that they were going to price gouge because it was a monopoly. But we were investing in this, what I had mentioned earlier, the commercial crew program. And it was a step back so we could kind of charge up and hit them harder. So the step back was to prepare the private sector, which is ULA and SpaceX, make sure that they're prepared to create the crew capsules that are necessary to transport crew and also test the rockets that would be transporting the crew. So in those years after the shuttle program, all that infrastructure was laid. The launch facilities, the rockets were upgraded, the crew capsules were developed, and all that stuff is coming to fruition. So it was a known plan, and we knew that we had to use Russia for a little while, but we also knew that when we came back, we would have two separate launch providers versus Russia's one, and that we could steal a lot of the market economy away from Russia when we came fully online. And that's very soon going to happen. I've actually talked to the International Space Station Program Manager and the Chief Scientist of the space station. We struck deals with people that would initially or originally take rides on the Russian Soyuz, and we've made it a little bit cheaper than the Soyuz. So all these people are going to be migrating back to us in just a little while, and that's going to leave a really big vacancy in the Russian program. So the Soyuz itself, it costs a lot. It's like $81 million per astronaut, up and down, and that's pretty darn expensive. But you have to think the Soyuz capsule is what sits on top of the rocket, and the rocket itself is also worth hundreds of millions. So if Russia loses a contract of X amount of astronauts, they have to use X amount less rockets to transport astronauts. And then their main competition, us, will have a diversified portfolio, larger capsules, two separate providers, and be able to transport more people, supposedly safer, but Soyuz hasn't messed up. But yeah, that's the plan. It was a step back, charge up, make sure we are ready to retake the market, and I would say next year, towards the end of next year, we will take it back from Russia. I'm actually a little worried about what's going to happen in the Russian program after they lose these hundreds of millions of dollars per year that they were banking on.
That's what my next question was going to be, is what are they doing with their money? Are they investing it back in their program, or are they kind of... Or I guess maybe you know, nobody would know.
I would assume. I have a pretty intense knowledge of the United States NASA space program. The Russian space program is, though we like to say that we're not competing with them, that we work with them, that space is a cooperative goal. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And, of course, we would like to see those dollars cycling back into our markets instead of theirs. So they, I'm sure that they've been preparing for this, but it's going to take a while, I assume, for them to be able to do, like, just do what we did, take a few years to step back, and then be able to come back when we're prepared.
Thaddeus Azari is here. What is your title?
I'm a NASA Chronicler.
NASA Chronicler is here this week. What other countries are kind of stepping up and taking that leap into the 22nd century, I guess, now at this point?
Well, China is actually, they're coming online pretty well. Initially, just a few years ago, the thought was that China just didn't have the technology, they didn't have the infrastructure, they didn't have the workforce or whatever you want to call it. But in the last few years, we've seen a massive resurgence in the Chinese space program. And it only makes sense. I mean, they've got a massive market, they've got a ton of money in their government floating around. So I would expect, in the absence of Russia, that China will step up pretty well to fill that gap. India's coming online. There's various, some small South American countries that are trying to make it happen. Europe's doing well. Canada actually has a pretty good space program. But the United States is, I mean, we've been in the lead for a while.
Canada seems to have a lot of astronauts.
They do. The CSA, yeah, they I would assume due to proximity, since they're so close to us, and since I guess you want to call it allies or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, they've got a pretty good space program, and they work hand in hand with us.
I actually applied to be an astronaut.
Nice.
One time. I did it kind of as a goof because I knew I wasn't going to get picked. But I figured, oh, why not? I saw they had an open call. Mm-hmm. So I sent them a letter, sent my resume in. And about 6 weeks later, I got a letter back from NASA. And I was like, oh, my God, I think I got picked. I don't really want to do this. But I can't turn this down.
No,
if they give it to me, I have to go.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then I got my letter. I opened it, and it said, hey, thanks. No. To paraphrase, but we will keep your resume on file and keep following us and everything. I thought that was really cool that they took the time to actually answer me back.
Yeah, there's been a massive influx of, I think it was like 18,000 people applied for the astronaut program this year. And man, that's just, it's a sign of things to come. It means that there's a lot of public awareness and more so acceptance and people yearning towards that field. So we can expect to see, I would assume to see that number increase per year or at least level off, but not drop, which is pretty exciting for someone like me. I just love seeing more people interested in space.
What do you attribute that interest to? Because it was big in the 60s. I was always, as a kid, I liked space. I can't do math, but I loved science, and I was always fascinated by it. But none of my peers really were. And then in the past decade or so, things have picked up. People are really interested. Neil Tyson is a superstar now. Mm-hmm. Bill Nye, people love him. They're selling $90 tickets to go see him now.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that love of science now all of a sudden?
Well, it's been an intentionally designed and specifically curtailed effort to bring it back to the public forefront. People, like you said, Neil deGrasse and Bill Nye, their job is to rebroadcast this stuff and try to instill it in people. But, that started with Carl Sagan before those two. Those two were actually influenced by Carl Sagan quite a bit. And having talked to, actually in, having interviewed Bill Nye, he very much wants to keep that message going. But I think it's the advent of social networking, social media, the increase of telecommunications, and I guess there's just more of it that people can readily see. You know, prior to me jumping around on Facebook, Instagram, whatever you want to call it, I had this dream to work at NASA, and I just didn't know how to do it. I knew it was difficult. I knew it was near impossible, but I didn't know how to even start. But with Facebook and the Internet and Twitter and Instagram and all this stuff, you can really pick up the breadcrumb trail a lot easier than it used to be. And more so, NASA itself is spending a lot of time on influencing people. They're spending a lot of time on media and marketing. It's quite impressive what they're doing now. So I would attribute it to intentional efforts of people in the higher-ups to spread this information and disseminate it in a way that is effective via the channels that we currently have.
So how do you convince those other people that that this is worth it? We got a lot of problems in the world, obviously, if you read the news. A lot of people will say that this money is best kept on Earth and should be spent here. Mm-hmm. How do you convince those people that reaching outward is important?
Yeah, that's a very valid question. And there's a few ways to answer that. The way I like to think about it is to yearn outward is an extension of an evolutionary tactic. So if you want to look at it in terms of a species trying to survive, you've got one group of that species sitting all curled up together, and if there is an issue with that species, say an apocalyptic type moment, and they're all curled up, balled up in that one area, they won't have much a chance to survive. So what's happened through the evolutionary process, there's this wandering gene. There's parts of the pack that go wander off, and they go to try to find new lands and try to figure out what is beyond the horizon. But by doing so, they separate themselves from that conglomerated pack, and they reduce the impact of an apocalyptic moment. So if you've got wanderers that are beyond the seam, that are beyond the actual group, and that apocalyptic moment doesn't touch them, they have the ability to continue to survive as a species. So if we apply that to the celestial model, all celestial bodies, all of them, are bound to have impacts by asteroids. I mean, that's just the way it works in space. If you X amount of time, something's going to get hit X amount of times. That's just the way it goes. So in our future, we will have an apocalyptic moment. That's in our future. So what we can do to help avoid this is we can become interplanetary. So if we have one of these massive asteroids that's hurtling towards Earth and it's going to kill billions of people, we can insulate our species from extinction by becoming interplanetary. So that's a very wide-arching way to answer that question, and it's tough even for me to explain it, and probably even more difficult to understand, but it's true. It's just, it's simply true. If we get ourselves off Earth and we get ourselves to Mars and we've got two separate packs of human beings growing and developing, we will have insulated our species from extinction in a very large way. But if you want to take it down to a more brass tacks, the age of nanotechnology, the age of miniaturization, and the age of global communication, they came from the space race between the Russians and the Americans. The nanotechnology, that's the miniaturization of things, making things smaller and smaller, and that need initially came when you've got a rocket and you've got a certain payload capacity and you can't go over it. Otherwise, that mission will be a failure because the rocket won't be able to perform. So NASA, just in a base scale, they instigated the age of nanotechnology by making sure and providing these technologies in smaller and smaller components. But also, I mean, all of the satellites that we use to talk to our mom and dad on the phone or send this broadcast, they go up to a satellite, they get rebroadcast and sent back down. The age of communication simply wouldn't have happened. The age of mass communication that we're in right now simply wouldn't have happened if NASA hadn't been a part of sending these satellites to space for broadcast.
I think it's hard for people to get it in their heads because it's not going to be something that's going to happen within our lifetimes, really, or even our children's or grandchildren's, but down the road we're going to have an issue where we might have to ditch out of here. And it's hard for people to believe that because maybe they have philosophical reasons or religious reasons or whatever, but it's going to happen, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And, I hope we can start convincing these people. Thaddeus Azari is here. He's a NASA chronicler. So what is the future of humanity in space? I know Mars is a big one. We want to get there, but I almost feel like that's an ego thing. Because it seems like now with machines and computers, we're not going to really need to send astronauts out beyond Mars because machines will be able to do that.
Well, it is kind of an ego thing, but that's what humans do. Humans push boundaries. We are stricken by that wandering gene. And exploring is what we've done since the beginning. You know, there's this basic thing that's inside of humans. When you stand at the edge of an ocean, you pretty much always wonder what's on the other side. You know, that's a very base way of looking at it, but you know, pushing beyond the boundaries, it has a way of instilling this invigorating jolt to humanity because it's this thing that you can continually yearn towards. It's this thing that you can't ever have. You can always work for the betterment of, but you can never have it inside of your hand because you can always be better at it. So, yeah, it's an ego thing, but, I mean, if we want to start a secondary colony on Mars, there's going to have to be humans there. And though robotics will be a large part of it, they will leave the infrastructure for the humans when we eventually get there. So the future of humans, it's in space. So far as I see it, there's going to be a lot more of us in space in just a few years. And there's going to be a lot more of us pushing the boundaries of what we previously thought possible. So short-term future, Mars. Intermediate future, the moons of Jupiter. There's actually this theory that there's probably a higher chance of life actually existing in this solar system on the moons of Jupiter instead of any of the other celestial bodies.
That's Europa, right?
Yep, yeah, yep. And there's Titan, no, Io. Yeah, Europa is the big one. But that's in the books. The future of humanity in space is one that we'll see much easier access. It's not going to be this thing that you have this supreme human that's hyper-intelligent that goes to astronaut school for X amount of years and then maybe has a chance to get to space. It's not going to be like that in just a few years. We're going to have the ability to send... all right, so look at it this way. NASA trains these astronauts, and they make them like these multi-use platforms that are good at everything. But wouldn't you rather have the lead scientist working on the science up there instead of an astronaut that's trained to do everything? Wouldn't you rather have the guy that has trained his whole life to do one specific task? And that's what we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing specialists that are really good and really good scientists in these certain areas that didn't make it through astronaut school that are still able to go up and, you know, and affect science in a very big way.
Okay, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but what's one thing, the most important thing in your mind that people should know about NASA, whether it's exciting, scary, whatever, just one thing that you think is important for people to know?
Well, it's a very, one thing that I've been working really hard to change is this public thought that NASA closes doors and shut down and, you know, NASA's on the decline. It's very incorrect. NASA is growing quite exponentially. NASA is looking for more employees. It's looking for more astronauts. It's looking to grow more. It's looking to bring more private industries in, and it's looking to continue to grow at a large rate. So what I would like people to take away from this is that NASA hasn't gone anywhere. It's not going anywhere, and it's going to be a really big part of our future, and I really hope that we embrace it.
Right on. Thaddeus, thank you very much for coming in. Do you have I know you said you got a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Do you have your social media accounts, all that you want to give out, website?
Yeah, for sure. My name, Thaddeus Azari, is how you can find me on YouTube. I've got my own channel. I've been working with this fantastic group of guys at Video Shampoo, Brooke Eschenroeder and Charlie Diaz. We've been making some great videos and publishing it under my YouTube channel. So Thaddeus Azari, T-H-A-D-D-E-U-S, Cesari, C-E-S-A-R-I. And you can see all of our publications there. Same thing with Facebook. And on Instagram, it's at Thaddeus, T-H-A-D-D-E-U-S, underscore C-E-S. And those would be my primary channels.
Perfect. Thanks, brother. All right, there you go. Thaddeus Azari, NASA Chronicler. That was awesome. Always very interested in space stuff. I'm an idiot, but I find it very, very fascinating. Learned some new stuff there. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you connect with the Homemade Broadcast on social media. Facebook.com/HMB Radio. My Twitter is home_made_man. Do not agree with people making Twitters for shows. So that's me. You can talk to me there. Make sure you check out the City Hall broadcast, we're calling it. Should be recording the next one this coming week. I'll be out in 2 weeks from the time this airs. It's always informative, a very informal look at local government. Kevin King, Mayor Kreisman's chief of staff. Ben Kirby, his media relations folk, join me on that one. And Instagram, home_made_man. I even do the Snapchat if you want to do that. If you want to send me pictures of your butt, send it to the homemade man. Someone already had home_made_man on Snapchat. You got to consolidate your social media, folks. That was a bummer. Oh, well. And 2-year anniversary of Slybar. 2 years of jokes at Slybar this Tuesday. Make sure you come out. $100 cash prize. We're going to do $50 lit comic. We're going to do $50 through a raffle. And anybody who comes in, put your name in a hat. We'll pull it out. And you win $50 just like that, folks. Easy as pie. Yard of Ale on Thursdays, 10 to midnight. Make sure you check that out. That's an open mic as well. So it's exciting time in HMB Radio's future and even their present. 2 years of jokes at Slybar. I can hardly believe it. So check that out. Email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. Just talk to me, folks. I'm so lonely. I'm so lonely, y'all. All right, I think that's it. Have a fantastic week, everybody. I'm going to talk to you all very soon. Bye-bye. Stay tuned. Jazz next on Radio St. Pete if you're listening there. Indie Circuit coming up after that. Bye-bye.